Barbish, it's my pleasure to be with you today. And it's relatively strange to me that I would, if you told me 10 years ago that I would accept an invitation to the Hearth Club, I would have said absolutely not. But after serving as mayor for 7 years and campaigning for 2 years before that, I certainly value the role that the press plays in the urban dialogue and the discussion of public policy. So a special thank you to John and others for having me. I brought a few notes, and I thought after I make comments for 10 minutes or so, that I would then we open it up for questions. So I have passed out, I've passed out my questions. No, I'm kidding. And feel free to ask yours along with mine. The city of Atlanta is a very interesting place, both in 2009 and going back over the last decades. We are one of the fastest growing cities in America. We're one of the fastest growing metropolitan areas in America. And we are predicted to be the center of one of the fastest growing mega regions, regions outside of Atlanta, actually. Regions that go as far as parts of North Carolina, Florida, Alabama, and Tennessee. So as we look at Atlanta's history, I think it's very important for us to review why have we been successful and how can we build on the success that we've had for the long term, because my assumption is that all of us here and the people who live and work and invest in Atlanta are interested in a healthy economy, a healthy city for their children and grandchildren and great-grandchildren. And that is the hard work that we do. Now, some would say that mayors, the hard work is filling the potholes, managing the day-to-day operations of the city. But I would say that the hard work is really looking out beyond the here and now into the future to make a determination as to what one must do today in order to ensure success years from now. That is the tradition of Atlanta. You can go to Mayor Hartsfield. Mayor Hartsfield in a significant role in water infrastructure with Lake Lanier, obviously with the airport. You can come forward with Mayor Allen and his very significant role during the civil rights movement and advancing air transportation in Atlanta and a close business relationship between City Hall and the business community moving forward. Obviously with Maynard Jackson, Andrew Young, and I have sought to continue that tradition of looking beyond the here and now. Now, what's interesting about that is that people vote for you because they want something done right now. So there's constantly this balance between how you spend your time and your resources on the here and now and how you spend your resources on the future. Well, I had a huge opportunity to do a little bit of both, and it's called the Clean Water Plan. Clearly, we had to make adjustments now, but the investment in water infrastructure will benefit the city business, and the public health for at least another generation or two. And it gave me an opportunity to say, we can do the here and now at the same time we are planning for the long term and for the future. The other significant thing about the water infrastructure program called Clean Water Atlanta is that no one thought we could do it, except for a federal judge and some strong environmental groups. And they were absolutely insistent that the city could tackle this problem successfully. I was not in their number when I was elected in 2002. I actually thought that we would fail, and that ultimately the federal government would take over the water system, and Atlanta would no longer operate its own water system. But here's the good news. This community rallied around this project, one of the sexiest, you have to admit, projects that recent mayors have put forward, rallied around this project, and out of that came not just a clean water plan and a financing plan and the ability to meet the requirements of the Clean Water Act and the aspiration for a clean environment, but out of that came a can-do attitude that we have used to tackle other issues and to seize other opportunities. So in some ways, the acquisition of the King papers, the Morehouse College collection, Dr. King's personal papers grew out of this can-do spirit that we experienced in 2003 and 2004 with clean water. I think that communities that tackle the toughest challenges in front of them are stronger to seize the opportunities that are available to them that they couldn't predict, like the acquisition of the King Papers, or like the issues around human trafficking, or like the issues of transportation, which I'm sure someone will ask me about, because that seems to dominate our public dialogue in Atlanta. So, where does that lead us? Having served for 7 years, and I'm not counting days anymore, but I am counting months. There are 11 months and a few days left. My job is to be sure that those projects that we have started, whether it's the infrastructure projects with water and sewer, or aviation, or the quality of life projects like the Beltline, or the Peachtree Corridor projects, or the initiatives around public education and access to college, my job is to be sure that the momentum is sufficient enough that these projects can continue into the next administration. So you will note that when we developed plans, whether for the Beltline or the Peachtree Corridor or the Green Space Program, all of them were 10, 15, 20, and 25-year plans. And that is directly related to my experience having been in two different administrations and knowing that ideas come and go. So I wanted to find a way to develop community consensus around some long-range projects that had a chance of living once I'm no longer in office. So that was by design, that they were not 4, 5, 6, 8-year plans, but rather plans that would overlap. In addition to that, where do we find ourselves in 2009? And I will conclude with these comments. Where do we find ourselves in 2009? Dead smack in a recession. I came in 2002 at the end of a recession, and now again we're smack dab in the recession. So my job is to be sure that Atlanta is fiscally sound and able to weather the recession as best we can. At the same time, we're investing for the long term. So on a day-to-day basis, most of my interaction with the media and a lot of my interaction with the public is about the here and now. But much of my work in city government with the cabinet is about what we are going to do 10, 15, and 20 years from now. As we move to this wonderful new change in Washington, I am very excited by the discussion. I recall being asked by one of President-elect Obama's aides early on if I had any requests for how the president-elect, who was then a candidate, might talk about issues in the city of Atlanta. And of course, you know me well enough to know I always say water. Water is always on my list. But my primary concern was that we would have in the Congress, in the Senate and the House, as well as in the White House, a potential partner for American cities, both Atlanta and other cities throughout the state of Georgia, where is my primary focus, but also for other American cities. And my one request is that he would talk about cities and urban policy. And indeed, he did so as a candidate, and I'm very, very pleased that we're going to see an urban policy advisor in the White House that will allow for the continued dialogue about the issues that are facing cities. Most people live in cities in the United States. Most people work in cities in the United States. Much of the wealth is generated in cities from business and investment. And it seems to me that America has to have a strong urban policy, because I believe that as cities go, the American economy goes. As American cities go, the stronger American cities are, the stronger Atlanta is, the stronger Georgia is. The stronger Georgia is, the stronger Atlanta is. So it's reciprocal. But very much so, the economy is driven by the economic activity that takes place in cities. And cities are different from exurbs and suburban areas and rural areas. And that is not to diminish at all the important role that other parts of the country play. But it is to say that you cannot, I don't believe you can have an effective policy for this era in American history without having strong urban policy. So I'm delighted to be here. I have many passions. The first 20 are all related to water and sewer. And often I'm asked the question, what is the hardest thing I've done? Or what am I most proud of? And indeed, I am proud of this community for tackling water infrastructure in a way that is painful to us, that is disruptive to us, but that ultimately will strengthen our economy and make us a stronger community and more viable and sustainable. So I am most proud of that. It is by far the hardest thing that I have done in public life, and this is my 20th year in public life. 13 years with Andrew Young and Linda Jackson, and now 7 years as mayor. So of all of the things I've ever been associated with, this has been the hardest. And we would say it's because it's buried and people take it for granted. There's an underinvestment in water infrastructure. There's underinvestment in America in infrastructure, but water infrastructure suffers very greatly. So thank you very much. You're talking to the sewer mayor.
Thank you very much, Mayor. And we have a few questions now for you, as you may not be surprised to know. And I will start off with an easy one. What is the most surprising thing you have learned about being a mayor?
The most surprising thing I've learned about being a mayor. I've been surprised a number of times. I guess the most surprising thing I've learned about being in public life as an elected official is how much access people want to your life. And you notice I didn't say the challenges of privacy. It's just that people want to interact with elected officials. And I have found one of my favorite stories was just recently. I'm getting on a very scary roller coaster at Disney World. I'm scared to death. I'm with a 9-year-old who's really thrilled. And the person behind me is from Metropolitan Atlanta. And they want to start talking about something in Metropolitan Atlanta, and I am trying to, some issue, and I'm trying to calm my nerves so that I just don't completely go crazy. That is what I mean by that. It's not bad. It's just a lot. People want ready, instant access and engagement. And that was surprising to me. I thought I would have a little more space.
Next one has to do a little bit with crime in the city of Atlanta. Mayor Franklin, I love living and working in downtown and midtown, but I'm worried about crime. Well, I may need them. Worrying about crime and homelessness. What's the plan?
Well, that's a great question. I brought a lot of crime stats, but let me just tell you overall. The city of Atlanta 20 years ago should have had 2,000 police officers. Those 2,000 police officers could be the full complement of services one needs to have a safe city. Some of it is police visibility, and some of it is investigation, follow-up, fugitive squad, all sorts of other activities. For reasons that are not worth describing today, because it takes too much time, we didn't do that. So when I came into office, we had 1,423 police officers in 2001. In addition to that, we had an administration who would not even talk about how many officers we had. And as a result, there was this great distrust. We had crime rates where Atlanta was ranked on a per capita basis annually as first, second, or third most violent city in America for 10 years. And there was occasional reporting of that. But it was reported only when the statistics came out and then people went back to their business. So it became really clear in order to address the crime rate, we needed leadership, we needed a plan, we needed investment in equipment and technology. But it also was true that we needed an investment in people. And instead of picking the number ourselves, we went out for an outside consultant. The results of that are that among violent crimes, the crimes are lower today than they were in 2000, into. Instead of being first, second, or third, we're 15th, 16th, or 17th. In addition to that, we've been able to hire another 300 police officers. And those police officers, for the most part, are on foot patrols. How many of you realize that for 25 years Atlanta had no foot patrols? There were no foot patrols in Atlanta for 25 years. Air conditioning came to Georgia. Everyone got in a car. Andrew Young introduced some bikes, but not sufficient to cover every neighborhood. We reinvested in foot patrols. So the answer to that question, shorthand, is we have to increase our investment in public safety. Now, there are those of you who will say, but we also have to do some other things. We've got to invest in education. We've got to invest in health care. We've got to invest in mental health care. We've got to invest in good jobs so that families can support themselves. We have to do all of those things. But as mayor, I am responsible for public safety and the police department, so I am narrowing my answer to that. Not because I'm not aware of the holistic approach, but rather, I am paid every day to think about the crime rate. Atlanta today represents 10% of the region. However, we represent the majority of the jobs and much of the after-hours activity and a lot of the hospitality activity. Somehow or another, and I've said this to council members, I am voting for the next mayor, since you didn't ask me that question, who commits him or herself to doing whatever it takes to get to 2,000 plus police officers. Because I am absolutely convinced we can't go any further in terms of safety without doing that. Now here's the bad news. We've been trying to get to 2,000 for 20 years. However, the latest studies say we need to get to 2,400. So it is quite possible between now and the end of my term that I will propose to the council an investment that would get the balance of 2,000 by January or June of 2010. It would be a fairly hefty investment. It would take millions of dollars to do that. But I am so determined that we reach this goal, and I would prefer to offer my successor a platform of 2,000 officers. They have to be well-trained. I've got all of that. I know that they have to be well-trained, etc. With respect to homelessness, Atlanta has adopted a 10-year plan to eliminate chronic homelessness, one of the most aggressive plans in the United States. It is a public sector, private sector plan, and the United Way in our community is instrumental in putting that forward. The results of that plan were going very well. In other words, we had made investments for permanent housing, training, job training, reconnection between families. Some people are floating through life and are really trying to get back to family or services. Well over 1,200 different people. And then the bottom falls out of the economy. So all of a sudden, we see a great new influx. If you ask any service provider in Atlanta, anyone who provides services, United Way, for instance, their 211 number, had a double-digit increase in the number of calls that they're getting. In some cases, as high as 20% increase in the number of calls they're getting for mortgage assistance, eviction assistance, health care assistance, food assistance. If you ask the community bank, food bank, they will tell you that their demand is so much higher now for working families than it was 60 months ago, and certainly even just a year ago. So we cannot forget that. Now, I'm going to put a plug in for living wage. This state has got to address the issue of how much it costs to live in this state. And we cannot act as if you can live on $5, $6, $7, $8 an hour and support a family and support yourself. Those are fighting words in some quarters. The city of Atlanta tried to add a living wage component to its contracting, which would be voluntary. In other words, if you were bidding for a contract, if you, in fact, added living wage as a component, we would give you an extra point in the calculation. We were following the very liberal model of Utah. Salt Lake City and Utah have such a plan. The General Assembly decided that they didn't like that, and they passed a state law to prohibit us from doing that. Didn't get a lot of publicity. Maybe you don't even care about it. But somehow or another, we've got to address the issue of living wage. And there is a coalition primarily of churches and synagogues and mosques who are working together in the faith community to present a much broader discussion of the issue of wages. People cannot support themselves at the minimum wage in a thriving, growing, competitive metropolitan area like the city of Atlanta. So that's just the tip of the iceberg, and I'd be glad to talk to whoever asked that question in greater detail later. Because you can see I could go on for a long time. Yes.
Okay, this is slightly related. This has to do with crime. Are you aware of how Facebook helped organize citizens in this crime wave, perceived or otherwise, crime wave in town? Facebook.
Yeah, I'm not on Facebook, okay? Now, people say I'm on it. I'm just not engaged in it. But I do understand the use of technology. I know that not only Facebook, I know Cobb County uses technology to advise people of what's going on in their communities. And it is something that we needed to look towards. There is no question we need to use the technology both to share information, to correct information, because sometimes the information that gets shared is not accurate, and to add transparency to all of the operations of city government, with public safety being at the top. No question about it. If you had asked my children, they'd know all about Facebook.
That's who's teaching me. Here's one. Here's your transportation question. How can Metro Atlanta receive more regional, state, and federal support for transit, and what is MARTA's future?
Well, I thank you for the question about transportation. It dominates a lot of the discussion at our regional commission, our Atlanta Regional Commission. It dominates a lot of the discussion when I'm traveling and talking to other mayors on the whole issue of the infrastructure, the transportation infrastructure, including the transit infrastructure. Those who don't have transit want it. Those who do have transit want to expand it, as we do. We'd like a streetcar. We want a Beltline. We want to upgrade MARTA, expand it. And there's no question there's a relationship between transit and a clean environment and our ability to move people more efficiently and in a way that doesn't threaten a clean air and really promotes clean air as opposed to pollution. I don't know. I don't know whether the economic stimulus package will have significant funding for transportation. I know as a mayor I've been lobbying along with and advocating along with other mayors that the economic stimulus package ought to include opportunities for communities to choose where they want to make the investment and not just direct it in particular categories or areas. What one community might need, another community may not. And we use a model following Mayor Riley from Charleston. We use a model which is called the Community Block Grant Model, where cities are allocated funds or local governments are allocating funds and then allowed to have a selection process that serves their best needs at the time. I was asked earlier today whether we had any shovel-ready projects. The good news for the city of Atlanta is that we have two very big shovel-ready projects, and then we have some public works projects that are shovel-ready. And that means that they are ready to go, ready to be contracted, ready to start, ready to put people to work, or ready to keep people at work in the neighborhood of hundreds of millions of dollars. Hartsfield-Jackson Atlanta International Airport is such a project. There are a number of projects related to upgrading the airport and expansion of the airport that are designed, the environmentals are done, some of the funding is in place, the contracting process could be jump-started and the funds could go on and flow. The clean water project is another where we're in midstream, having completed our first consent decree on time and under budget. We still have the second to do, and that's worth well over $1 billion in addition to all the repairs we're doing on the drinking water. So both of those are ready to go and would be the kinds of projects that could hire hundreds of people, in some cases thousands. In addition to that, we have bridges that need repair. The city of Atlanta needs to repair and upgrade its infrastructure, separate and apart from water and sewer, and separate and apart from the airport, by $100 million a year, and we spend between $50 and $60 million a year. So that means that there are bridges that need repair, sidewalks that need repair, roads that need repair, ramps that need repair, and we anticipate we could spend somewhere between $30 and $50 million in 18 months starting shortly after being granted those funds. So if there is an economic stimulus package with infrastructure, Atlanta, the city of Atlanta, is ready, ready to go with those projects. Now, I believe that from descriptions I've heard from the general manager at MARTA, that there are also projects at MARTA. And I would assume that there are projects related to other transit around the metro area. But there was an economic summit, transportation summit last week with representatives from across the state and especially across the region to talk about this very issue. What do we need to do to be at the front of the line on transit and transportation? And what we are being told by those who know in Washington and our members on the delegation and within the transition team is that we need to be coordinated across the region, that we shouldn't be one-upping each other, we're trying to get in front of each other, we should be coordinated, and it should be intermodal. In other words, it should not just be trains versus buses versus Beltline or streetcar, and we need to be intermodal, and it needs to be across the region. If we are not, there is some fear that we will not score as high as we would hope for transportation funds. But the good news about that is we are told that there's a good chance that these grants will be 100% grants, not requiring a federal match. Now that's both good and bad. Excuse me? No, a local match, yes. Not requiring a local match. Thank you for the correction. That's both good and bad news. The good news about that, it's always good to spend somebody else's money. But the bad news about that is when you're spending your own, you have what is called commitment. So I would hope that we have a little bit of both in whatever we do. Both the commitment from the local community, the state, as well as the federal government. And then we could expand the program beyond just the federal funds. Hope that was close to the answer.
That was good. Here's a water question. Your next job is regional water dictator for three states, Georgia, Alabama, and Florida, with the power to tell three governors what to do. What would you tell them?
I'd lock the door. I wouldn't tell them anything. Act first. Actions always speak louder than words, right? I don't know that I will ever have that opportunity, but ultimately, the three governors and their related staffs are going to have to sit down at the table. And I think it becomes more imperative every day that Georgia be one of the instigators of that meeting so that we can get beyond this 20-year dispute over water. But here are the facts. The Chattahoochee is not a big river. And we are a very big metropolitan area, and we are a growing state, and so is Alabama, and so is Florida. So we have got to find some middle ground that works for Georgia, that works for Alabama, and that works for Florida. And I am very encouraged that President-elect spoke to the issues of the tri-state water dispute weeks before the November election and said that he would use the power of the White House and his office to bring those governors together. So I think he was reading my mind. You can give me any of my questions yet.
Oh, did we skip the picture file there on the monitor? What issues did the Atlanta media miss out on these past few years? And what would you like the media to cover or investigate more?
Well, I'd like you all to investigate everything. I think we've gotten great coverage on water. And we've got consistent, regular coverage on water, at least the Clean Water Plan and the program and the consent decrees. And I know it's very sexy because we were paying fines and now we're not, and you know, the catch basins overflow. I mean, there's lots of visuals associated with that. I don't think we have really covered the relationship of what Atlanta is doing with water and what we need to do in the state as thoroughly as we could. Because it is interrelated. We have to be part of the state plan. And it is frustrating to me sometimes that the smaller story, which is the Atlanta story, $3 billion story, doesn't get out of the context of the tens of a billion dollar program that the state of Georgia needs. And I think that's been a missed opportunity. I often think, and this is not what you've missed, I often think the stories are disjointed. They're not related to each other. It's like the media is not reading each other's stories. And that those of us at the readers have to make the connections. And that's frustrating to me. And some of you know that because I send emails to members of the media and say, you know, what's going on in the recession and the downturn? Let's just talk about that. We have two questions on crime. I mean, the media's coverage is, well, Atlanta's doing this and DeKalb's doing this and Clayton is doing that. But the truth of the matter is there is a something that's happening in the region around crime, what's happening in the region around war. And often, the articles and the stories and the coverage is so narrow that we just assume people can put all the pieces together. And that's very frustrating to me. Maybe because I do this every day. And I would prefer to see, I mean, nearly every important story that is written or broadcast or really to say, this is what's happening in Atlanta, and this is how it relates to what's going on in the region. I think it would be a huge advantage to the public to be able to see these things in the context. I'm not asking to change the whole focus of the story, and I think that is largely missed. I actually think it's missed every day in nearly every story. And that was not what you thought I was going to say. You thought I was going to talk more about an issue. I think the next thing that is missed, and this is an issue, the Atlanta airport is not covered as if it is an economic stimulus. It is covered as if it's an operation. And it is an economic stimulus, and most states in the United States, at least 30 of them, would die to have the airport. To have had the visionary leadership of 7 years ago, and then 50 years ago, and 30 years ago, that has developed the kind of aviation infrastructure that allows us to have 89 million passengers last year, and billions of dollars worth of cargo move. This community built that from the ground up, from a dirt road. We built it from the ground up, but it is rarely covered as in relationship to the economic stimulus that it is. And I just think that's something that's missed. I think it's been missed for a long time, not just in the last 7 years. So those would be the kind of things that I would recommend.
Okay, we'll try and squeeze in one last one. That's not the one I wanted.
Here we go.
Well, I lost which one it was, but it was basically, what are you going to do from here? What's your next challenge? What would you like to do after you leave office?
Well, between now and when I leave office, I'm going to work really hard every day except Friday That's our furlough day, and that seems to be a big issue with folks, but I work 7 days a week most of the time, so now I'm working six. But the bottom line is I expect to be engaged in the city. I've only been in elective office for 7 years. I had a life before that, and I expect a life after this. I've been a teacher. I've been an administrator. I've been a consultant. I've been a small business person. I've been an executive in a large organization. I like public policy. My passion, once you get past water, is students, young people, 16 and up, and their transitions in life. I think I have fond memories of my own struggles at that age to make the world up, right side up. And I have a particular interest in ensuring that young people who live in Atlanta and near Atlanta can make that transition as smoothly as possible, get a decent education, and really follow their passion. So if I had my druthers, I would work in the field of education at some level. Thank you very much.